tonight. Yeah, we're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy tonight. We're talking about protecting the kingdom. I had never heard the phrase or the expression protecting the kingdom before I came here to Working Faith Ministries. The first time I remember hearing it was on a Friday night Bible study, and I believe Bishop was talking about grace. And he said, we have an obligation to protect the kingdom, and we're failing in it. And a couple weeks later, and see, I know these because they're in my notes, right? A couple weeks later, he talked about protecting the kingdom again, and the message, it was a Friday night, and he called it Porcupine Christians. Okay, you can go somewhere with that picture, right? The porcupine and all his quills, and we're shooting them at people, and Christians repelling people from the kingdom by the things they say and do, don't say, don't do, all that stuff. Wednesday, last week, when Pastor Linda and Bishop were preaching, one of them said, our greatest responsibility is to protect the kingdom. I've been here listening to Bishop talk about protecting the kingdom long enough that I am absolutely convinced that the greatest thing we can do is protect the kingdom. So we're going to talk about it tonight. And Pastor Katie is going to show you a tiny little clip, and if you blink, you'll miss it. So go ahead, Pastor Katie.
The fate of 12 billion people.
Oh, nice and loud.
It's in the hands of.
Let's go back. Start that over and play it loud. I like loud. Like in the movie theater, you know, when it rattles the. Oh, no. All right, you can, you know. Did you ever have technical difficulties in the theater? Yay, God!
The fate of 12 billion people is in the hands of these criminals.
Oh, yeah.
Boy. They call themselves the Guardians of the Galaxy.
This might not be the best idea.
What kind of feeling? I'm high on the.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. All right. He said this might not be the best idea to put the fate, to put the well-being of billions of people in the hands of criminals. This might not be the best idea, but God did it. We are all criminals. Every one of us. Thank God we're forgiven for everything. But even as we walk this earth today and our role is to protect the kingdom, we fail. And we have blood on our hands. Every person who looks at us and decides against Jesus. Every person who hears us, sees us, and says to themselves, I don't know. How many times have you heard, I thought you were a Christian? Well, right there's blood on your hands. How many times have you heard, and you call yourself a Christian? You see what they're seeing. You see what they're thinking. How often have you said, I can't believe a Christian would do that? So when you hear that, say that, feel that, you're looking at blood. Blood is being shed. Somebody is either deciding for or against the kingdom every minute of your life. There are always eyes looking at you. There are always people looking at you and deciding for or against the kingdom. I don't even know how many years ago, again, long before I started working at a church. I was working at a real estate office, and in the desk next to me, you know, there's like several desks side by side, rows. Okay. No, we didn't have cubicles. They were open, but just one desk, then another. In the desk right next to me was a beautiful young woman by the name of Alicia. She's probably 10 or 15 years younger than me, and for some reason, as soon as we met, I just loved her. Didn't take me long to find out that I was this brand new on fire for God Christian. There wasn't anything that was happening in my life that wasn't related to God, and there wasn't any way I could talk about my problems and what was going on in my life without talking about what God did. It didn't take me long to find out that she was an atheist. Hey! That didn't change my love for her. We started hanging out together because we really enjoyed one another's company. One day, we were driving to South Bend, which was about a 45-minute trip to go to Aldi. That's the closest Aldi to where I lived. You think Lake Placid is small? You only got to go 20 miles. Okay. So we're on our way to Aldi in South Bend, and I'm talking about the problems I've been having and the way God's solving them for me. And I looked at her and I said, you know what, Alicia? I hope you don't mind. I just don't know how to talk about my life without talking about God. And she says, well, I don't mind. I hope you don't mind that I don't believe in God. And I said, well, you know, it is what it is. We're friends. We'll just, you know, we just keep on going. 10 years later, the house right next door to us sold. And when I saw the people moving in, and I'm going, I think I know her. I went up to meet my new neighbors, which I do, you know, like instantly. And I'm like, Alicia, we're neighbors. Yay, God. I don't know if I said yay, God yet then. I don't know. But we started talking, and I could tell from her conversation that she was a different person. And then she told me, she said, you know, I'm a Christian now. Hello. I said, Alicia, what happened? She said, you know, yes. She said, I watched you all those times we were together. You had all the same problems I have. You had all the same challenges, but you handled them differently. I watched you. And I saw your life going places and mine was going the other direction. She said, and I said to myself, what have I got to lose? Right now. I mean, what does the bishop say? What have you got to lose? If it don't work for you, you can always go back to your own way. But here was someone that I just befriended. And I just lived my life in front of her. And because of that, she and her boyfriend were now married. Her children were happy again. Her children were in church. Her whole life had turned around. She had been turned off from God by her mother, who was very poorly treated in a church when she got divorced. And she never wanted anything to do with God ever again. Somebody is looking at you every minute of every day, making a decision for the kingdom. There are always people who are in the kingdom and, you know, deciding whether they're going to step deeper into the kingdom, be more committed, or whether this is like, I don't know, I can't take any more of this. I think I'll get out. There are people who have never come into the kingdom who are watching you. I don't know if I asked Bishop or he said it in a message, but he defined the kingdom. The kingdom of God is all the people who are already in it and all the people who have not yet met him and do not yet know him. And in both groups, there are people making a decision every minute of every day. If they're going to go deeper with Jesus, or if they're going to take the plunge into the kingdom, or if they're going to turn around and go the other way. Every time we cause them to make the wrong decision, we have blood on our hands, we are convicts. And yet God trusted us with that responsibility. That is the highest responsibility that a Christian has. When you think about, and Bishop and Linda talk about this, what you put on Facebook, when you think about it, is it drawing people into the kingdom? Is it creating in them a desire to come into the kingdom? I think I have a pretty strong filter, so I don't usually even try to write things that are going to be okay. But when I want to put something on Facebook, I write it in a different app, a little notes app. And then I read it. And I usually delete it. Read it. Write it, read it, and delete it. It's a good policy. Pastor Katie, show us the first slide. All right, we're coming out of John 4 tonight. I have been studying John 4 since the first week Bishop returned from his vacation, so however many weeks that has been, like six maybe. I've just been stuck in John 4. And I have seen so much. You know, he's preaching about take a walk with Jesus and seeing Jesus. We're walking with Jesus so we can learn his heart, so that we can have his heart, so that we can live by his heart, reflect his heart. And there's so much in John 4 that reveals the heart of Jesus. So I've just been stuck there for a month and a half. Last Thursday morning, I got a text from Pastor Linda that said, Bishop has requested that you be ready to preach on Wednesday. You know you don't say no when Bishop requests something, right? So I went home, and I said, okay, God, I'm up Wednesday. What's the message? What do you want me to talk about? And I didn't hear anything, so I just went back to John 4, where I've been for 6 weeks, and I didn't get past the first verse. I got stuck right there. And I knew from that verse what the message was, that the message is protecting the kingdom. John chapter 4, verse 1, the Pharisees heard that Jesus was winning and baptizing more disciples than John. Oh. Actually, Jesus didn't baptize anyone, only his disciples did. So when Jesus heard what was being said, he left Judea. And he went back to Galilee. Go back to the first sentence. The Pharisees heard that Jesus was winning and baptizing more disciples than John. Here are the Pharisees pitting Jesus and John against one another, making it a competition, making it a rivalry, making it a contest. Who's the better preacher? Who's winning the more? Who's baptizing the most? They are causing a division between the two greatest men on the earth. Jesus said about John, there is no one born of a woman. Hey, that's everybody. There's no one born of a woman who's greater than John. And John said about Jesus, the one coming after me is greater than I am. My influence is going to decrease. His is going to increase. I'm not even worthy to untie his shoes. Sandals in those days. The two greatest men on the earth, each with a different purpose, each with a different calling, each with a different assignment from God, and they are trying to divide them. Do you see that? When you pick favorites, you are causing division. I don't care where you are. If you're in this church, if you're watching TV, if you're talking to your neighbors, when you pick favorites, you know this from your household. If you have a favorite child, what does it cause in your house? Division, argument, rivalry, insecurities. When you pick favorites, you cause division. Here are the Pharisees causing division between the two greatest men on the earth. Jesus ain't hearing of it, okay? He ain't playing that way. Jesus having nothing to do with it. As soon as he heard it, what did he do? He left the country. As soon as he heard it, he left Judea and went to Galilee. He is not going to allow someone to divide what God is building. Here's the beginning of the Christian church. The beginning. Think about all the innocent eyes that were looking at Jesus and John. Innocent eyes. People who don't know what's going on. People who are watching them going, wow, we ain't never heard it on this wise before. Wow, what's he saying? You know that Jesus talks Jesus stuff? What does he mean? All these people who were being so positively influenced by Jesus and John, what if Jesus had just allowed that division to go on? Think about, you know how zealous Jesus' disciples were for Jesus. They wanted to call fire down from heaven on somebody who was preaching but wasn't a part of their group. Imagine. Jesus, can we call fire down from heaven on them? They ain't part of us. Of course, Jesus said, no. You don't know what spirit you're of. John's disciples came to John and asked him, well, what about this guy? the disciples were questioning. If Jesus had allowed that to go on, can you even imagine all the innocent eyes that were looking at John and Jesus that would have been turned away from the kingdom? So Jesus is going to leave and go to Galilee. Let's see the next slide, please. Oh, nope, not ready for that one yet. Go back. I think I missed something here. Oh, go ahead, Pastor Katie. I know where I am. Jesus is not the only one who faced that problem. This is Paul addressing the same situation in the Corinthian church. 1 Corinthians, the first four verses are just packed with Paul talking about people who are picking favorites. There's Paul, there's Apollos, there's Peter. He says, one of you says, I belong to Paul. In other words, Paul's my favorite. And another says, I belong to Apollos. When you say things like this, you're acting like people of the world. The people of the world, the spirit of the world, that's division. One translation says you're acting like mere humans. Okay? Acting like people of the world. Is Apollos important? Is Pastor Donna important? No. Jesus is important. Is Paul important? Is Apollos important? No. We are only servants of God who helped you believe. That's all we are. We are not one more important than the other. Each one of us did the work God gave us to do. We in Working Faith Ministries are in a unique situation that you don't see a lot because there are a lot of pastors here. And Bishop encourages and trains and equips and gives a platform for every pastor that's called to preach. He works to bring out in us the character, the things that God planted in us. So you have a challenge that not every church has, and that is to not pick favorites. That is to not cause division. That is to not start rivalries and competitions. Do you understand me? Do you hear what I'm saying? We have a unique challenge here because there are not very many churches who on any given Wednesday you could come and hear a different speaker. So we have a unique challenge not to cause division in our body by picking favorites. Let's go to the next one. Some of you are saying, I'm a follower of Paul. Same story. Notice one was chapter 3. This is chapter 1. He's saying the same thing again. This is really big to him. Some of you are saying, I'm a follower of Paul. Others are saying, I follow Apollos or I follow Peter. Now Peter's in the fray too. Or I only follow Christ. Ever heard anyone say that? I don't listen to any man, I only listen to Christ. Only God can talk to me. Have you ever heard that? Well, it isn't new, because there it is in 1 Corinthians. Has Christ been divided into factions? Are we dividing up Christ? That's what he's saying. Is Christ divided? The answer is no. Christ is not divided. Has Christ been divided in factions? Was Paul crucified for you? Were any one of us, was Bishop crucified for you? Was I crucified? I hope not. No. No. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus, for taking that. Oh, Jesus. Were any of you baptized in the name of Paul? Were any of you baptized in the name of any pastor in this church? No. We didn't die for you. You're not baptized in our names. Stephen Furtick didn't die for you. Bill Johnson didn't die for you. What am I saying? When you pick favorites, you're looking at the wrong thing. Everyone, every servant of God on the earth, everyone who speaks to you, who pours into you, is pouring into you what God gave them for you. And God gives every one of us something different, JJ. He doesn't give the same thing to me that he gives to Pastor Linda. Where'd she go? She was sitting. There she is back there now. He doesn't give me the same thing he gives to Bishop, though I wish he did. No, I didn't. Did I say that? God gives each one of us something different. A different chisel on your character comes from each person who pours into your life, whether it's on the TV or the books you read, or speakers here. Every person who pours into you is giving to you what God gave them for you. How much do you miss? I have heard this when I've gone to someone and said, can you help us tonight in children's ministry? We're short. Who's speaking tonight? Seriously? Seriously? Don't you know that if I need you in the children's ministry tonight, that's where your blessing is? It's not here in the chairs. If God needs you to speak to his children, your blessing isn't here in the chairs. I learned that when I was a part of children's ministry, and I decided I couldn't do it. I wasn't good enough, and so I didn't go downstairs for children's ministry on a Sunday when I was assigned, and I sat right there, well, not quite right there, maybe more where Teresa is, in the service, which was always like flames of fire. You know, the Bible was on fire. There was revelation coming. I couldn't get enough. And I sat there, and it was as dry as a cornfield in October. I expected, you know, the whole thing to burn down any minute. And I said, God, what's wrong? There's no revelation here today. And he said, and there won't be until you do what I told you to do. In other words, go back down in that children's. You know, I didn't make it through the service. I was back downstairs. And so I can tell you from my own personal experience, wherever God wants you, that's where your blessing is. Let's look at the next one, Pastor Katie. I got to keep moving or I'm going to be like Bishop up here and going, what? My time is up? No. We did not receive the spirit of the world. Received the spirit that's from God so that we can know all that God has given us. Remember, the spirit of the world, division, separation. We have received the spirit that's from God so that we can know all that God has given us. Next one, please. I'm supposed to do like that, aren't I? Okay. 1 Corinthians chapter 3 again. So, you should not brag about human leaders. Shouldn't brag about anybody. What do you have that God didn't give you? What does any one of us have that God didn't give us? All things, this might be one of the greatest verses in the Bible. You shouldn't brag about human leaders. All things belong to you. How many things? All things. Can you comprehend that? All things belong to you. All things, whether it's Paul, Apollos, Peter, everything that God, as I said, has placed in any person who speaks to you, who leads you, who develops your character, all things, every revelation Paul, Apollos, or Peter ever had, every prayer they ever prayed, every word they wrote or spoke, it all belongs to you. Every word that God gives Bishop belongs to me. Why you think I'm always trying to pull nuggets out of him? What's inside him belongs to me. Yes, it does. All things belong to you. Now, I gotta pull it out. But here, it's scriptural. All belong to you. Everything that Stephen Furtick knows, Bill Johnson knows, Chris Fallotton knows, anyone you want to name, it all belongs to you. You just have to dig it out. And so you don't pit one against another. You don't pick favorites. You go and get everything that God has placed in each and every one of them for you. How about this? Remember, this is all things belong to you. The world belongs to you. With all its good, with all its bad, everything that's in it belongs to you. Everything that's in it is under your feet. Everything that's in it is required to co-labor for your good. Everything in the world, in life, in death, the present, the future, he doesn't say the past, but even that, everything is required to work for your good. It all belongs to you. It's all under your feet. It's all something that you are supposed to either command to go or learn from. It's all there for your good. And everything that comes against you, God will turn it around for good. All the authority. You ever think about all the authority that Paul walked in? You ever think about that? He gets bit by a snake and just shakes it off. And they're all waiting for him to die. But Paul walks in authority. All the authority that Bishop walks in, all the authority that anyone you want to know or can name walks in, it all belongs to you. Why would we brag about anybody, about ourselves or anyone else? Because it all belongs to you. All things belong to you, and you belong to Christ. What's the significance of that? Christ belongs to God. There is not a thing, not one thing, not one thing that God will not do for Jesus. Jesus belongs to God, and you belong to Jesus. So what does that mean, Anne? There is not one thing that God will not do for you. All these belong to you, and you belong to Jesus, to Christ. And he belongs to God. How much better can life be? I mean, if we just think about all that God has given us and focus on what God is trying to do in our lives again. Look, I just can't keep coming back to this. It took an awful lot of chiseling, an awful lot of chainsaw work, an awful lot of every tool they use to create this beautiful cross. And it takes an awful lot of the work of God in our lives to create the beautiful picture that he has. And if I ignore even one of those people, if Pastor Jim, and he does, has something in his life for me and I ignore it, there's a part of that beautiful picture that's not going to develop. Barb has something for me and I ignore it. I brush it off. There's a part of me that's not going to reflect the picture that Jesus sees. Everything belongs to us. All right, now back to John. So we had Jesus, and the Pharisees are trying to divide him and John, and he ain't playing that way. So he leaves Judea to go to Galilee. It says he had to go through Samaria. Well, why? Why did he have to go through Samaria? Because mostly the Jews didn't go through Samaria when they wanted to go from Judea to Galilee. They walked east to the Jordan River, walked through Galilee east till they got to the Jordan River. Then they walked north along the Jordan River until they got to Galilee, and then they went back west. They took the scenic route. That's what my husband and I say whenever we get lost, whenever we take the long. They took the scenic route. It was longer. Why did they do that? Because they despised the Samaritans. Because they didn't want to walk through their land. You live in Lake Placid, you need to get to Avon Park, and you're not going to drive through Sebring because you hate the residents of Sebring. So you're going to go all the way around it. That's what the Jews did. Now, do you know what they argued about? Do you know what the big point of contention in their lives was? It was, where are we supposed to worship? They both worshiped the same God. They both worshiped Jehovah. They both had the same books of the Bible, the Pentateuch, the Torah. They had the same word of God. They worshiped the same God. They despised each other because the Samaritans felt that the right place to worship, Bruce, was on Mount Gerizim, where Moses said to worship. And the Israelites, the Jews, we worship at Jerusalem, at the temple that David had built, even though it was, you know, not his anymore. The big point of contention was, where are we supposed to worship? Over where to worship? God's people hated one another, avoided one another. Do you see what division does? So Jesus, who is protecting the kingdom, is going to go right through it. But it says he had to go there. Why? Do you remember how often Jesus said, I only do what I see my Father doing. I do what my Father shows me. I say what my Father says. Jesus saw what the Father was doing. The Father showed him, you're going through Samaria. Jesus knew he had an appointment. He had a divine appointment in Samaria at a well. He had to go through Samaria because that's where his Father was going. That's what his Father was doing. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar.
near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. You see, they had the same ancestors. Jacob, Joseph, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph. They had the same ancestors. They lived near Jacob's well. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus was tired. Tired from the journey. So he sat down by the well, and it was about noon. How hot is it at noon? Oh, my gosh. We can relate. We live in Florida. Whew. Yep, it was about noon, and a Samaritan woman came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" Jesus is what? A Jew? She's what? A Samaritan? Will you give me a drink? Her answer was, no, her answer was an argument. How are you going to ask me for a drink? You a Jew. I'm a Samaritan. How are you going to ask me for a drink? But Jesus, who is protecting the kingdom, didn't let her get into an argument with him. Jesus started a process of winning her. He started a process, a dialogue with her to bring her into the kingdom, to create a desire in her. So instead of saying anything argumentative in response, when she said, why are you talking to me? He said, you know, now I can so see Bishop saying this to me. You know, if you knew the gift of God. You know, I go to Bishop and, hey, got a nugget for me, Bishop? Bishop like, Donna, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that's talking to you, you would ask me for a drink. And I'm going to go, huh? And that's what she did. Huh? Jesus is speaking what? Jesus. Jesus is speaking Jesus. He's not even speaking Hebrew or Aramaic. He's speaking Jesus, and she doesn't understand a word. If you know the gift of God and who it is that's talking to you, you would have asked him for a drink. Her response, how are you going to give me a drink? You ain't got nothing to draw water from the well from, and the well is deep. How are you going to do that? Jesus is not arguing again. He says, the water that I would give you would spring up in you as a well of living water, and you'd never be thirsty again. Nugget after nugget after nugget he's throwing at her. You see that? Nuggets are scriptural. Begging for him is scriptural, Bishop. He's given her one nugget after another, making her so curious. And he says, you know, the water that I would give you would spring up in you, and you, a well of living water, you'd never be thirsty again. What do you think she makes out of that? Nothing. Like, okay, give me that water so that I don't ever have to come here again in the heat of the day and do this hard work of drawing water from the well. Just like the people that Jesus fed, you know, the 5,000 and the however many other thousand, the 3,000. And they followed him back across the sea and they said, give us this bread, Jesus, so we don't ever have to work for bread again. They missed the revelation. They just wanted the freebies. She doesn't have the revelation yet. She wants the water that's going to keep her from ever having to come to the well again. Bruce, this is so much work. I would be so glad not to have to drag my water pot here, fill it with water. Water's heavy, you know, if you haven't ever carried it. Water's heavy, even a 5-gallon pail, let alone those big 13-gallon. Okay. Hard work in the heat of the day. Give me that water. See this? You see Bishop pulling me in. Give me that, Bishop. Give me that. She's like, Jesus, give me that water. Here comes Jesus, and Bishop is just like him. Jesus says, go get your husband. What does Jesus, or what does Bishop say to me when I ask for more? What does he say? Come on, you've heard him. You gotta come to church. I see that the same way, Bishop. Bishop says, you got to come to church. If I tell you, you won't come to church. Jesus says, go get your husband. You know Jesus is funny. You know that? Jesus is hilarious. And she looks at him and she says, well, we got a problem here. We have a small problem, Jesus. I don't have a husband. Did you see me almost try to take a drink out of the microphone? Okay. So, I don't have a husband, Jesus. And he's like, I want to say it in my own words, but, well, I will. I'll say, you ain't lying, lady. You don't have a husband. You had five. Now, we don't know what happened to her husbands, whether they all died. If five died, imagine her life. One is enough, isn't it, Teresa? Five husbands she lost. Whether they were divorced, and you know, a woman could not initiate divorce in those days. So, I mean, the level of rejection, the level of pain, of grief, of disappointment that is in this woman's life is unimaginable. And Jesus is wooing her, winning her, pulling her, creating a desire in her. I don't have a husband. Yep, you're right. You don't have a husband. Pastor Katie, slide number 13. Yeah. There we go. The woman said, sir, I can see you're a prophet. You knew I didn't have a husband. You knew I had five. You know the one I'm living with isn't my husband right now. I can see you are a prophet. Now, I want to know if you can see the great big U-turn that just happened in her thinking. Do you see it? Here was a Jewish man that she wanted to argue with, that she wanted to argue about where you should worship, that she didn't understand a word of what he was saying, but he didn't argue with her. He didn't do anything to turn her away. Everything he did created curiosity in her. And he said, go get your husband. Sort of like, you know, the vacuum cleaner salesmen that come to your house and they say, okay, where's your husband? Get your husband. I'm not going to give you this presentation unless the man who signs the check is here. Right? Isn't that their strategy? Come on. Yeah, it is. Okay. So she says after that, I can see that you are a prophet. She just did a great big U-turn. And now she's beginning to see who's standing in front of her. If you knew the gift and who it is that's talking to, she's beginning to see. He didn't throw any porcupine quills at her and repel her. He created a desire in her. Let's do the next one. The woman said, I know, now see, she's done a big U-turn. I know that when Messiah will come, he's the one we call Christ. When he comes, didn't the Jews, I mean, Christ was, whether you were a Jew or a Samaritan, he's the one, they worshiped the same God. They had the same information. They hated one another. Division is horrible. He's the one we call Christ. When he comes, he will explain everything to us. Yeah, I know, Messiah's coming. When he comes, he'll explain everything to us. And Jesus says, I'm the one. That's me. I'm the one talking to you right here, right now. That's who I am. Jesus told her, and I am that one, and I am speaking to you now. You know what she did? She ran back to the village, and she told everybody in the village, come and see this man who told me everything I've ever done. So there was a lot more conversation that we don't have written down there. He told me everything I've ever done. Could he be the Messiah? God had created such a desire in her through the things that Jesus was saying, that now she's going back to the town.
telling everybody, come see this man. See, Jesus is protecting the kingdom. I'm going to take a pause right here. Jesus left Judea to protect the kingdom. He went to Samaria, where Jews and Gentiles, or Jews and Samaritans, hated each other. He's protecting the kingdom. He has come to Samaria to heal a division between two groups of people who both know and love God. And they only argue about where should we worship. Have you ever seen that happen in our time? We argue all the time about where to worship. When to worship. Christians, people who know the same God, love the same God, have the same purpose in their life, to be like him, to learn his heart, to become like him, to go out and reveal his heart to others. People, all good people, Christians who love God, divided. Jesus came to Samaria to heal a division that had existed for centuries. And he starts right here at the well with this woman. She does such a U-turn. Will that be the testimony of your life? Seriously, will that be the testimony of your life? That instead of repelling people who didn't think the way you thought, instead of shooting porcupine quills at them. That was such a genius comparison, Bishop, when you did that. I have not forgotten that one. Instead of that, you created a hunger in them. You created a desire in them just by watching you. Alicia is such a perfect example. I never tried to force Jesus on her. I wasn't even consciously thinking about, maybe she'll see Jesus when I die. No, that was my life. That was only way I knew to explain to her what was going on in my life and how I was handling it. And somewhere in that time we spent together, it created a desire in her. She told me about the day that she went home and she said to her then boyfriend, she said, you know, what we're doing isn't working for us and it's getting worse and worse. Why don't we go to church? And he agreed. A desire has to be created in people. One of the most important things you can do to protect the kingdom is to create a desire in people. You can only do that if you are, as Eugenia said, emulating the kingdom, or emulating Jesus. If you are emulating Jesus, your life is going to create a desire in people. A desire to know more. A desire to come to Jesus. Did I finish this slide? Yes, Jesus said, I'm the one. I'm speaking to you now. And she ran back into the city, and she told everyone she knew. And she invited them to come. And they came. And they listened to Jesus. And they invited Jesus to stay. And he stayed there for, I think it was 2 days. It might have been three. He and his disciples, you know, who were still learning from him how to protect the kingdom. These young disciples, this is only John chapter 4, right? Jesus calls them in 2. In 3, he turns water into wine. In 4, he's leaving because he's baptizing more people than John, and they're trying to separate them. Jesus is teaching his disciples how to protect the kingdom at the same time. They go to the well. The disciples go into town to get some food. They come back. They find him talking to a Samaritan woman, and they're like, ooh. He shouldn't be doing that. Really, read it. You'll see it. Read the whole chapter. There's so much more in it than I have time to tell you about. But that was their response. They didn't know what to say. And so it says nobody said anything. But what did they learn from him? She ran back into the town. She invited them all to come. They came. He and his disciples stayed for 2 more days. And many of the Samaritans in that town believed in Jesus because of what the woman said. He told me everything I ever did. Everything I ever did. When the Samaritans came to Jesus, they begged him to stay with them. So he stayed there 2 more days. Many more believed because of the things he said.
many more believed. Some believed because of what she said. Some will come to the kingdom because of what you say. And they'll come to Jesus. And many more will believe. Again, is that the testimony of your life, that you are living in such a way that people become hungry for the kingdom, that people desire to come into the kingdom? Every minute, I'm serious, every minute of every day, innocent eyes are looking at you. What do people see when you drive down the road on a busy highway and somebody's trying to get in? Do they see someone who gives them that highway salute? Or do they see someone who gives them an opportunity to merge into traffic? What do they see when you're driving? What do they see when you're shopping? You know, I go shopping a lot, and my husband usually waits in the car while I'm shopping. Many of you have seen me in the grocery store. Hardly ever have you seen my husband there with me, right? He's usually waiting out in the car. So I am usually focused on getting what I'm there for, getting as quickly as possible, getting back in the car, ready to go home. So when I go in the grocery store, I'm focused. Which aisle do I need to go to grab that? Which aisle do I need to grab that? Grab that, grab that. I'm not looking around. There are a lot of people watching you, watching me. There are a lot of you who have seen me in the grocery store, and you know I haven't seen you. And the only way I know you're there is when you go, "Yay, God!" Yeah, how many times have I heard in the grocery store, "Yay, God! Oh, hi! How are you? It's so good to see you." So why am I telling you that? What's coming out of you while you're wandering around not thinking about anyone else, while you're focused on what you're doing? What are your actions saying? What is the look on your face saying? What are the words? What atmosphere are you carrying? Even when you're not thinking about anybody else, when you're not thinking about the responsibility to protect the kingdom, what atmosphere are you carrying down the highway, through the store, at your workplace? Pastor Linda can tell you horror stories about how poorly she's treated at work. But she can tell you amazing victories, the results of her not retaliating, not arguing, not speaking back in a negative way. She can tell you of amazing victories, and she has. You can think of some of them, can't you? Of people who were amazed at how she handled things like that. Of people who looked at her and want what she has. Don't you want that to be the testimony of your life? That whether you're thinking about it or not, you are carrying Christ so vividly, so visibly, that people want to know what you got. That, you know, is what happened to me. That is how I got into the kingdom. I've told you the story. I'm going to tell you again because I love the story. I was teaching the Dale Carnegie courses. I was the instructor. It's a big deal. All these people are coming to my classes. And I'm supposed to teach them. I'm the teacher. And I'm watching this one man in the class. The class is 13, 14 weeks long, plus what they call a zero section, so it's really 15. I'm watching this one man week after week, week after week. I'm like, there's something different about him. I don't know what it is. What does he know that I don't know? How can he say that he's not concerned that the General Motors plant that he works at is closing in 3 weeks and he's out of work? How can he say GM is not my provider, God is? How can he say that? Because if I lost my job, I'd be in big trouble. I watched him week after week after week. I listened to him. You know, in the Dale Carnegie course, when you take the course, you have to speak twice in every class. You have a one-minute speech in the first half and a three-minute speech in the second half. So I get to hear a lot from these people. And I'm listening to him, and it's like this woman at the well. What does he know? What's he doing? What does he have? I don't know anything about what drives this man. And so I went to him, and I asked him, what do you know that I don't know? What do you have that I don't have? See, he created a desire in me by his life, by his words, by his actions. He created a desire that brought me to him to ask, that brought me into the kingdom. He is the one that opened the kingdom to me. I asked to meet with him to find out what that was, and we sat down at, I think it was a Big Boy restaurant in Three Rivers, Michigan. And he sat down at the table, and I said, you know, Mark, the reason I asked for this meeting is because you know something I don't know, or you're doing something I'm not doing, or you have something I don't have. I don't know what it is, but there is something so different about you, and I want to know what it was. And he introduced me to Jesus. He introduced me to Jesus. Is that going to be the testimony of your life, that people just watching you wanted to find out about the kingdom? Are you creating a desire in them? That's the real question. Is that going to be the testimony of your life? Or is it going to be that you threw porcupine quills at people as you were driving down the road or posting on Facebook or caught up in your own little world, not paying any attention to anybody? Yeah. Daddy, we love you. Teach us how to love you more. Teach us how to rightly represent you. Bishop, that series you're teaching is so important. It's life-changing in every way that I can think about. We're learning to look at Jesus in a new way so that we can be like him in a new way, so that we can have his heart. Without his heart, you cannot protect the kingdom. I'm going to just put it right out there. You can take it or leave it, but without God's heart, you don't have a chance of protecting the kingdom. Without the heart of Christ, you will be shooting porcupine quills at people and you don't even know it. There will be innocent blood on your hands. You know, the truth of the matter is, this is the truth. You don't know how much blood is on your hands. You have no clue. You might know some of the people that you failed, that you repelled them from the kingdom. You don't know how many victories are in your life. You don't know how many people have turned to the kingdom because of you. God doesn't show us all that. I'm blessed that he let me see Alicia. Is she the only one? I doubt it. But God doesn't show us all that. He doesn't show us all the blood on our hands. Thank you, God. He doesn't show us all the victories. We'll know them. Get this. We'll know them when we stand in front of him on that last day, and you walk up to him and you stand right in front of his face, face to face, and you look into his eyes. That's when you will know how much blood is on your hands. That's when you will know how many victories are in your life. And I don't know about you, but I want to live my life in such a way that when I get there and I stand in front of him, there's more victories than blood. I know there's going to be blood on my hands. I already know there is. I can give you examples of it. Am I proud of them? No. Am I learning from them? Yes. Because I don't want any more blood on my hands than necessary. I don't want any blood on my hands that I could help, that I could change. Every time Bishop gets up here and talks about the heart of Jesus, my prayer before he ever starts to speak is, God, show me something new in your heart today. Show me another facet of your beautiful heart so I can reflect it, so others can see it. I don't come in here and waste my time. I don't come in here and waste Bishop's time. A lot of work goes into what Bishop gives us. A lot of revelation. He sits in front of God and God downloads. Now, remember that one verse that says, all things are yours? Everything he downloads into Bishop is for me. Well, it's for you too. But it's for me. And I want it. I want every bit of it. So when I come in here, I ask God for it. And when he's speaking, I watch for it. I listen for it. I take notes because, you know, my brain is full, so I got to have an exterior hard drive to remember all those things. I go home, and I sit in my bedroom in the rocking chair, and I meditate on what he said, and I pray over it, and I read it again. Why? I might be the only one, okay, but I miss a lot. I miss a lot. When I go home and I re-listen, I'm like, did he say that in service? It's on the recording, so he must have. How did I not hear that? Well, you did not hear that because your brain was focused on something else at the time. All I'm saying to you is, again, everything that God puts in him, everything God puts in any person who's speaking into your life, it's all for you, every bit of it. It's up to you how much of it you're going to get. It's up to you how much of it you're going to reflect to others. It's up to you how much of it you're going to actually consciously give to others. May the testimony of our lives be that of the woman at the well who did that amazing U-turn. Jesus created a desire in her, as he has done in all of us. But may our testimony be that, like the woman at the well, after she did that amazing U-turn, we run into town and we tell everybody, come see this one I met who told me everything I've ever done. Could he be the Messiah? Come and make up your own mind. I got my mind made up. And it tells us that many of them believed because of the words she had spoken, but many more believed. Many more believed because they heard Jesus. How are they going to hear Jesus if you don't lead them to the kingdom? How are they going to hear him if you don't create a desire in them? God, as the movie clip said, you've entrusted the kingdom to criminals. It might not look like a good idea, but you did it, so it has to be a good idea. My prayer, Daddy, is that you work so strongly in each and every one of us. Change us so greatly that we don't really even always have to be focused on protecting the kingdom. It's our nature. It becomes our heart. It becomes our nature. It becomes our atmosphere. And everywhere we go and everything we do co-labors with you to create a desire in those who see us so that they'll come to you and hear for themselves. Daddy, I only can say you got your work cut out for you. Some of us are really hard-headed, and I'm in that group. You really have your work cut out for us. But you didn't set the kingdom up this way in vain. You knew before you ever set it up who you were handing it to. And everything that you have given us, Daddy, it says all things are ours. Everything that you have given us co-labors together, not just for our good, not just for our learning, but for us to be able to go out and represent you and draw people into the kingdom. Let it be that, Daddy, in our lives, that everything that comes into our lives makes us so much like you,
adjusts our character, changes our character, brings us into the character of Christ, and allows us to reflect you in everything we do. May we not ever consciously or unconsciously do things that repel people from the kingdom. And when we do, because we know it happens, as Bishop always says, give them another opportunity, Daddy. Where I failed, bring someone else around them who will not fail. Thank you for that, Daddy. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Without you, we couldn't do anything. We can't do anything. Without you, our lives would be so wasted and worthless. Thank you that they're not. Thank you that our lives are important, that they're valuable, that they're productive, that you look at us and you're proud, you're happy, because we're doing everything we know to do to protect your kingdom. We are guardians, not just of the galaxy, guardians of the kingdom of God, and you have honored us with that. Thank you for that. I'm going to ask prayer warriors to come forward. And if you have anything on your heart that you want to talk to a prayer warrior about, if you have prayer requests, these people up here are guardians of the kingdom. These people who are going to protect the kingdom with you. These are people who are going to help you protect the kingdom. These are people in whom God has invested many things, and it's all for you. Everything that's in Barb belongs to you. Everything that's in Daisy, everything that's in Pastor Marjorie and Pastor Jim. Yeah, everything that's in Marie, too. Everything belongs to you. Come and pull it out of them. Every prayer, every revelation, all their strength, everything. So come up and get some of it. Bishop always says, if you want some, come get some. God, we love you. Thank you for tonight. Thank you for taking everybody home safely and bringing them back here safely on Friday night. You're so good. We love you. We love you. We love you. We love you.